Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Melanie C., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm calling in from Oregon. Today is Friday, October 12th, 2018, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on Chapter 10, Two Employers, and we'll be reading through six paragraphs today, starting with Among Many Employees Nowadays, through that sixth paragraph on 137 that ends with Helped by Better Understanding All Around. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, CJH, the 12 Traditions, Julie E.B., and reading the text today, John K. and Jordan L. Thank you for that. The share ID numbers for this meeting yesterday, which would be Thursday, October 11th, 2018, is 12033, 12,033, and that would be for the 10 a.m. yesterday. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, Big Book Study meeting, that share ID number is 12037, 12,037. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose. To carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask CJH to please read the 12 steps. Star 1 CJH.
Okay, sorry, Melanie, thought I was unmuted. CJH, compulsive eater, here are the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thanks for letting me be of service.
Thank you. CJH, I will now ask Julie E.B. to please read the 12 traditions.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks.
Thank you, Julie E.B. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you're done sharing, let us know by same pass. Then press star 1 again to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted using star 1. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 136, paragraph 1. That would be the chapter to the employers, chapter 10. We're going to be reading the first paragraph, among many employees nowadays, through 6 paragraphs and commenting on all of those, and it will end on page 137, with helped by better understanding all around. And I'll ask John Kay to please start reading those paragraphs and then comment with his experience on what he's read. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Melanie. Thanks for your service and everybody online. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Chapter 10, Two Employers. Among many employers nowadays, we think one member who has spent much of his life in the world of big business. He has hired and fired hundreds of men. He knows the alcoholic as the employer sees him. His present views ought to prove exceptionally useful to businessmen everywhere, but let him tell you. I was at one time assistant manager of a corporation department employing 6,600 men. One day, my secretary came in saying that Mr. B insisted on speaking with me. I told her I was not interested. I had warned him several times that he had but one more chance. Not long afterwards, he called me from Hartford on 2 successive days, so drunk he could hardly speak. I told him he was through, finally and forever. My secretary returned to say it was not Mr. B on the phone. It was Mr. B's brother, and he wished to give me a message. I still expected a plea for clemency, but these words came through the receiver. I just wanted to tell you Paul jumped from a hotel window in Hartford last Saturday. He left us a note saying you were the best boss he ever had and that you were not to blame in any way. Another time I opened a letter which lay on my desk, and newspaper clipping fell out. It was an obituary for one of the best salesmen I ever had. After 2 weeks of drinking, he placed his toe on the trigger of a loaded shotgun. The barrel was in his mouth. I had discharged him for drinking 6 weeks before. Still another experience. A woman's voice came faintly over a long distance from Virginia. She wanted to know if her husband's company insurance was still in force. 4 days before He had hanged himself in his woodshed. I was obliged to discharge him for drinking, though he was brilliant, alert, and one of the best organizers I have ever known. Here were three exceptional men, lost to this world because I did not understand alcoholism as I do now. What irony! I became an alcoholic myself. But for the intervention of an understanding person, I might have followed in their footsteps. My downfall cost the business community unknown thousands of dollars, for it takes real money to train a man for an executive position. This kind of waste goes unabated. We think the business fabric is shot through with a situation that might be helped by better understanding all around. Well, it's a very interesting chapter. I'll give you a little bit of history stuff on this before I go talk. The gentleman who was writing this, his name was Hank Parkhurst, and he had been one of the early members of OA and with Bill Wilson, and he had been an executive with Standard Oil in New Jersey, and he helped start Works Publishing with Bill Wilson that published the Big Book for the first time. And unfortunately, Hank didn't stay sober, and had some personality clashes with Bill, and ironically, just the kind of stuff that helps get alcoholics fired ended up breaking up him and Bill. But, you know, this chapter, it sort of explains the fatal nature of the disease. And when it comes to alcoholism versus compulsive eating, alcoholism is much more immediate in its ramifications and possibilities than compulsive eating. But, you know, with food, it's like they say, it's suicide on the installment plan. And I can tell you, you know, after all my years in program, I know many, many people who were not here anymore, not on this earth as a result of this disease. Two sponsees. You know, I get kidded over my other program about, you know, OA sometimes, and they joke with me. And I tell them, no, you know, I buried two sponsees, but I buried them in OA, not in AA. And other people I've known, brilliant people, and young anorexic women who died because their heart muscles gave out, and a lot of suicides, you know. And I've been to more than my share of OA funerals, and I remember saying to another friend one day, I said, the words I hate hearing the most in an OA meeting is when somebody comes up to me and says, "Did you hear about ... because I know it's going to be, they're not here anymore. And the scary thing is that almost all these people I can think of that died as a result, the reason I knew them is that they had come to program, and they'd had some success, and they had been doing well, and they gave it away. And I know that if I could go back and tell them, this first compulsive bite you're about to take is going to lead to your death, they would take it so much more seriously. But it's so hard to know, is this the one? It's Russian roulette. And in terms of how, you know, dealing with an employer, you know, in terms of how food affects us, you know, it hardly ever gets us fired by eating. I mean, I'm out here in Los Angeles. I know actresses who've had this problem over the years. I know one friend who ended up on a reasonably successful sitcom for a number of years. I watched the pilot, and then because the next season they ran the first season, and you could see how much weight she had gained. And it's because they have this thing out here called craft services. Have you ever heard that? And when you're shooting a film or TV or anything, there is like a smorgasbord of food you can get. And I remember she said to me one day, there's nothing harder to stay away from than free food. And I can understand. But many of us didn't lose our job directly from food, but it did affect our performance and our attitudes and our resentments. I worked harder than other people. Other people were stupid, quote unquote, you know, especially my bosses. All these, you know, defects that they talk about, resentments, jealousy, envy, frustration, fear. And I used to call them sick sometimes. Was I really sick? No, I was depressed from sugar, ate too much. I was asked that by an early OA sponsor, had you ever stolen from your employer? And I was, well, of course not. He said, really? You never called in sick when you weren't sick? You ever slacked off because you weren't feeling good after a binge? And of course I did, you know. And I was glad he had me look at those things. Because looking back, I'm not proud of those things. But that's the great thing about what they teach us here, is to look back at those things critically and know, this is what I did, but I no longer have to do this again. And because this new way of living you know, and doing all these things is what takes out the insurance against that possible slip, as Dr. Bob said, and this book tells me how. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, John Kay. Thanks for opening that this morning for us. So for those that are just coming in, we are in the chapter to employers, chapter 10. We're opening it up today with the first six paragraphs. And the first paragraph starts with among many employers nowadays and then ends on page 137 at the bottom, the second paragraph, better understanding all around. It's opening, I'm going to open it up now to other people that want to comment their experience with the directions on those six paragraphs.
Susan H.
Hi, Susan.
Kathy G.
Kathy G.
Patty T.
Patty T.
Stacy T.
Stacy T.
Jordan L.
Jordan L.
Mary G.
Mary G. That'll be it. Thanks, folks. I have Susan H., Kathy G., Patty T., Stacy T., Jordan L., and Mary G. Hi, Susan. Good morning to you.
Susan H., a compulsive overeater in Colorado. Thanks, everybody, for joining the call and being my spiritual strength and hope. This is a really nice, I love this to employers chapter because this actually is what drove me to OA was my feeling of guilt that my obsession with food was taking away from my work. And I felt an overwhelming sense of guilt to my employers. And, you know, every day when I would work, I was either obsessed with what I was going to eat, what I was not going to eat, when I was going to exercise to work off what I ate, and trying not to eat. And then a lot of times I would say, well, I'm too busy with work to worry about my weight, so let me just eat whatever I want. And that would take me off the day. My focus, my energy, my presence for my coworkers and my customers was profound to me, and it made me feel really guilty. And that's actually what drove me more than the weight itself. And this paragraph is such a good reminder of just the effects that addiction can have in our lives and our ability to serve others. And so I like the story of contrast because it's three stories that didn't make it, but one that got to watch it and did. So while it shows a bit of sadness, it also shows a lot of hope of the man or the woman that gets to survive it and is able by the grace of God to be given some tools. And like what was said earlier, it doesn't give it away. It doesn't give up and practices this every day so that when they do find success, they keep it. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, everybody. Have a great Friday.
Thank you, Susan H. Kathy G., you're next. And then up after you is Patty T.
Good morning, Melanie. And good morning, everyone. I'm grateful to be here today. It's Kathy G., recovered compulsive overeater from Illinois. And thank you for the shares. And thanks, John, for getting us started. You got me thinking about a bunch of things. And one was when I was in the food, I remembered this job that I had many years ago. I was in Detroit doing the show, and I had to wear this red sequin gown at one point. And I remember the director of the show coming up to me at the end. It was a six-month job that I had. And I remember he came up to me at the end, and he said to me, like, kind of with, you know, a glint in his eye, he's like, oh, Kathy, are you? And he was just looking at my belly and like pregnant. He thought I was pregnant because I was kind of spilling out of this dress that fit like a glove. And I had gained like 15 pounds during this job because I was on an expense account. And I just used to go with my partner and we'd have all this gourmet food and, you know, there was always food around and the food and the food and the food. And I remember how mortified I was because there was part of me in my sickness that thought nobody was really seeing this, that I was somehow hiding it, but clearly he had seen it. I used to have people ask me if I was pregnant on a regular basis. And that has left my life, but it used to happen all the time. Because I think part of the bulimia piece was just that a distension of the stomach. And my body could look relatively normal, but it was just, I ate so much food and did such damage to my body. So as we were reading these paragraphs this morning, you know, they were talking about a man who took his death jumping out a window. And I felt like that many times in the depths of this illness. I really felt like not waking up. It was just too painful. But I don't think I had it in me to take my life, maybe because of my faith. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I didn't have the courage. I don't know. But I really want to offer for anybody who feels really desperate with bulimia or compulsive overeating to please feel free to give me a call. I'm Kathy with a C, Kathy G as in garden, and I'm on the member list, and I would be more than happy. I'm really grateful that I never did jump out a window today, and I have hope, and we have hope, those of us who are working these steps and working through the big book like this. You know, we have hope like never before, and you can have that too. So hope you all have a great day. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Kathy G. Patty T., it's your turn. Up after you is Stacy T.
Hi, this is Patty T. Thank you so much for your service, Melanie, and happy Friday, everybody. Wow, these paragraphs are stunning to me, and they really bring back a lot of memories. I can remember when I was 16 years old and I stepped on the scale, which was the most important event on a weekly or daily basis in my life, and I weighed 195 pounds. And with no self-pity, no emotion whatsoever, I remember thinking, well, when it gets to 200, I'll kill myself. And that was just the way I thought about myself. You know, I was worth nothing if I could not be thin. And if I got to 200 pounds, that was it. Not acceptable and out of here. And, you know, fast forward to moving to California from the East Coast, and I rapidly, because I discovered drive-thrus, I rapidly went from 145 pounds to 211. And then I started all those diets, you know, those diets. And then fast forward to just about 8-9 months ago, and I was in the sugar, and I was a raging maniac at my job. The profanities that flew out of my mouth, the complaining, the grousing, the rage that was the current that I walked through the halls with and carried with me was unbelievable. And people literally would move away. They'd move back. I was cynical. I was, you know, I was self-loathing, and I hated everybody else too. And then somehow by the grace of God, I asked God to help me get abstinent again and to not eat sugar because of what it does to my personality. And I began working these steps. I got on this phone meeting, and today I am recovered. I can't tell you how many people noticed the difference of my work. How much she laughs and how happy she is, not to mention the 33 pounds I've lost since April. But that is just the icing on the cake. Today I do like myself. I do love myself. I am thankful to God that I have people who understand me and who I can talk to about all these this self-centeredness that blocks me from the sunlight of the spirit and would have me take my own life. Thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Patty D. Stacy T., it's your turn, and then after that it'll be Jordan L. Hi, Stacy.
Good morning. This is Stacy T., recovering for today in Cleveland, Ohio. Thanks very much for your service and for all the shares. two examples that came to mind is when I had some folks mentoring with me. One was before I knew about Overeaters Anonymous, and the other was during a period I had known about Overeaters Anonymous but was not attending meetings. And my behavior was a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And predictable results happened. I didn't make the kind of difference that I wanted to, and came to really know during that last time that I, in fact, was a compulsive overeater of a hopeless variety. And the next was in the 80s, very early 90s, worked for a large institution and had measurable success and visibility. And along with that, I had measurable chaos and unpredictability. And my employer really did not know what to do with me. And it was very difficult. And I knew that I couldn't stop from starting. That was just the bottom line. I couldn't stop from starting again. And I was in OA at the time and hadn't been introduced to the big book. And so for those like me back then, there is a way out. And I've had to crawl through so many holes, rabbit holes, whatever you want to call them, in order to get to the daylight. And it certainly for me hasn't been easy. But today I know through the work that I do as an employer of my own business today that perfectly imperfect, my walk and my talk match, and that I am my word to the best of my ability. And for that, I am extremely grateful. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Stacy. Now it's Jordan L.'s turn, and then it'll be Mary G., but we'll open it up after Mary. Hi, Jordan.
Good morning, Mel. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, cool. My name's Jordan L. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. This chapter, to employers. God, it's funny. It's kind of a weird chapter to look forward to, so to speak. But I kind of have been. Only because my current job is so very much tied to my compulsive overeating. So it was, 2.5 years ago I applied for this job and I got it. And I am currently a food and beverage manager, which is pretty ironic for a compulsive overeater and an alcoholic like me. But I suppose that I would go where I would go to a career that is most suited to my drug of choice, right? So at the time that I took this job, I was in active compulsive overeating, so I suppose it does make sense that would be my job. I certainly haven't been the best employee. I don't know about you guys, but food puts me in a fog. Like, it's really easy to see how being drunk on the job, you could, not do your job well. And I think that it's probably the case with food as well. If I am in a food coma, I can't do my job very well. But there's, we don't have the research to back that up as far as, what effects that has on your brain and whatnot. The only reason I would know that is being sober now, being sober from the food now, and seeing how much better I can do my job when I'm not compulsively overeating. So have I stolen time from my employer? Most definitely. not only time like physically binging at work because there's food around all the time, but time being in that food fog, you know? And I can still get really tripped up if I allow my head to run away with me at work. If I let myself spin out on a resentment without calling someone or praying about it or whatever the case may be, you know. this employer stuff, it's very interesting to me. I'm very intrigued. I'm excited for the chapter. So that's all I got this morning.
Thank you, Jordan. That's Jordan L. We're on page 136 in the big book. Follow us there. We're in chapter 10, Two Employers. Just open it up that chapter today with six paragraphs, starting with Among Many Employers Nowadays and ending over on page 137 with Better Understanding All Around. If you want to read ahead, because right after Mary G's 3 minutes, I want to open up the line for additional people to comment their directions, comment on their experience on those paragraphs. Hey, Mary, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your service. And this is Mary G. In Mesa, Arizona. And, you know, this paragraph just really brought some sadness to my heart because I do know people who have died of this disease and who have taken their lives. And, you know, I never really understood how fatal this disease could be. I can remember when I first came into vision and they would talk about the life and death issue. You know, this is a life and death issue. You know, it might be a slow suicide, but I am killing myself if I keep eating. And, you know, with the employers, oh gosh, you know, I was never reprimanded for being into the food, even though, you know, I certainly ate more than my fair share of whatever was around. As a nurse, there's always food around. But I remember how sluggish I was and how, again, in that food fog. And, you know, of course, my fix for that was eat something, you know, and, you know, get a sugar high. You know, I just was not aware of how different it could be. And yet when I look back and realize that, you know, once I became abstinent and put down my alcoholic foods and started to bring my own lunch, you know, I was just amazed that in the time that I had to do my work, it got done. It was like before, I would be bringing home my charting. I would be bringing home, you know, all kinds of work that I just never seemed to get done because of my mismanagement of time. And, you know, I have to laugh because one of our directors of the hospice I worked for was also a doctor of mine. And I had seen him when I had first lost weight, and he had known me for years. And so when I came back 6 months later, his comment to me was, "Oh, you're still skinny." And, you know, that is just a comment that always sticks with me because nobody ever knew what I was going to look like. You know, I could go up and down faster than, well, mostly up, faster than anything. And, you know, it's just a miracle of this program that, you know, I can maintain a healthy weight. And today, you know, I am so grateful that, you know, I know my employer is my higher power, and I just simply do the next right thing in front of me. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary G. The lines are now open for folks to comment on those six paragraphs starting on page 136. This will be the last invitation. That's all the time we'll allow for about five more people.
Donna. Carol O.
Donna Pat, and Carol.
Patty D.
Sherry
K.
D. Sherry K. B.
That's Carolyn B.
And I heard Marilyn. So that'll take us out there for those five. I'm sorry, Betsy, that was just not going to be, I think, today. So I have Donna B, I have Carol O, I have Patty D, I have Sherry KB, and I have Marilyn T. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. This is Donna, a recovered compulsive overeater in Denver, Colorado. I graduated top of my class, both in my undergraduate degree and in my graduate degree. And so much like Bill's story, beginning of his story, I felt like there was so much hope, so much potential, so much recognition, so much, you know, that the fact that I was so quote unquote smart and accomplished in school would take me to amazing places. But what I found was that my disease didn't get too much in the way when I sat alone in my room memorizing textbooks, compulsively overeating, smoking 2 packs a day of cigarettes. It wasn't too much of a hindrance in getting straight A's. But when I went out into the real world, I was entirely incapable, unskilled, inadequate in working. I just could not get along with the people that I worked with. When I began my career after graduating from graduate school, I had the best job offer. And over time, either by being fired or by leaving jobs because I just couldn't handle them, I found myself going lower and lower and lower in the corporate chain. It was humiliating and degrading. And at some point, I just had to leave the industry entirely. I could not function. I could not perform. The disease was very much getting in the way of my ability to work, especially because of my relationships with other people in the workplace. Today, I'm so grateful that I have had the same job for more than 11 years. And during that 11-year period, I have certainly had challenges with relationships, but because of the program, I've had the opportunity to work through those challenges in a much more effective way. Given that God is my employer, as someone mentioned earlier, and because I've learned how to ask for help. So I'm just very grateful to be able to have a job that I enjoy, to be able to show up. Thank you. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Donna B. Carol O., it's your turn. And then Patty D. will come up after you. Star 1, Carol O.
Melanie, can you hear me now?
I can. Hey there.
Okay. This is Carol O. in South Florida, and Melanie, thank you for your service. I worked in a French restaurant once, and they would have these cream cheese tarts. These people were from France, everything was beautiful. And I would just eat them. And I can remember one of the head waiters saying, Carol, you know, those cost a lot of money. You can't just eat those. And I don't remember paying any attention to her. And they sold their soft drinks by the bottle. And I would just be drinking them. And I gained 20 pounds in 2 months. And I was let go. They said, this is why. They just said, someone else is coming to work here. And I can remember... also, when I was in junior high, I got a job in a little restaurant across the street from the school. And I would be making, cream sodas and giving free food to my friends. And that job lasted about 2 weeks. And so, an eating, stealing school, is not a good employee. And that's all my experience. And I thank you so much. I have no business working in a restaurant or even at this point in my recovery, even going to restaurants. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol O. Patty D., you're next. And then Sherry KB will come in right after you.
Hi, this is Patty D. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Hi. This is Patty D. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater from North Carolina. Thank you so much for your service, Melanie. I just wanted to share that I've been in the program, I guess, since May, but I was married for 25 years to a compulsive overeater who was probably morbidly obese for much of our marriage. And he passed away in December at the age of 59. And we were divorced probably about 10 years ago. And his compulsive overeating was a huge part of our problems in our marriage. And I remain thin throughout our marriage, although now I see I was also a compulsive overeater. But what I wanted to share was that he had entered the program and initially was doing well, but then he made the mistake many of us do, saying that he could do it on his own. And of course, after he left the program and stopped speaking to his sponsor, he relapsed. And he died of a massive heart attack. And the sad thing is that my four children now don't have a father. And I just wish that his employer was able to actually say something about his obesity. But because he was brilliant and he was a fantastic engineer and a great manager, that was overlooked. Whereas, you know, when someone is an alcoholic, it's not. But, you know, I wish it had been spoken and addressed, because now he's gone. And so many of us, you know, that even though it is frowned upon, I guess people are looked at differently when they're morbidly obese and there's a prejudice against them. It's not looked at by employers, but it is a health risk. It's something that impacts us and shortens our lives, and it's deadly, and yet it's not addressed, and it's a sad thing. And so that's all I needed to share. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty D. Sherry KB, you're up, and then Marilyn T. will come after you.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive over a year, and so glad to hear you doing service this morning, Melanie, and welcome everybody on the line. Boy, this is bringing up a lot of mixed feelings and memories, and I didn't realize it would hit me like this. You know, I've had two friends that died of this disease. One died in May of this year. It was very devastating to me. And then another friend who died in the 90s when I used to live in Santa Barbara. And, you know, I was in such denial about my own disease that, you know, we call it death with a fork, you know, death on the layaway plan, all of this stuff. I never would have thought that my career, that my disease got in the way of my career. I used to work in an industry in the 80s that food and drink were just massive, and it was celebratory to do all this kind of stuff. And at one point I was anorexic, and I would be, you know, from not eating to benching my brains out, and just, you know, I was told in the 80s that sugar is poor man's heroin, and you know, I used to smoke a lot of cigarettes, and I didn't know that they were laced with sugar. And I also, you know, fast forward to this week, I had to finish up some tax work. And, you know, I stayed abstinent happily and contently. And my higher power was with me all through the taxes. But years ago, before I really did the work this way, I used to take gallon baggies of peanut M&Ms, and I worked for myself. And
hey, you're not meant to say the names of foods here.
And excuse me. Anyhow, I think we can. Thank you. I used to just gallon baggies of peanut M&Ms. Unbelievable. When I think about the difference today than who I was back then. And my husband used to call them chocolate Valium, and that's how I got through everything before I started doing this work this way. And staying abstinent happily and contently through my higher powers care has made so much of a difference. I never knew I was in a sugar haze and how it affected me in so many areas of my life. And that's why I'm so grateful that I'm abstinent happily and contently through my higher powers care. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. KB, I hope that didn't cause you to end your sharing earlier than it should have been. Marilyn T., you're next.
Hi, Melanie. Thank you for allowing me to share. What I was thinking about was what this brought up was, just a whole career of different jobs, actually. And I wouldn't say that the food was the cause of leaving, but I can remember several were in the food industry, and I think I realized that I couldn't handle those. The last one that sticks in my mind was for 25 years, I was in the medical healthcare field. And all the different badges that I had to wear for my job that had pictures of thin me, heavy me, fat me, thin me, heavy me, fat me. And those were very interesting. That's just something that this all dredged up. But what the bottom line that I wanted to share real quick was that what took me out of that career at 3 years ago, this last month, was two strokes. And what it was is I had, even in this program, lost all my weight, but not really understood the alcoholic binge foods, behaviors, and ingredients. And then went out of the program and gained it all back. And then we're talking like 160 pounds. It's ridiculous. But the strokes, I mean, literally talk about food on the, death on the installment plan. And in the end, it was attributed to high blood pressure that happens when you gain the weight and high cholesterol that happens when you gain the weight. And literally in the medical healthcare field, not paying attention to that and then having those strokes. So see, almost dying. And that's the bottom line of this disease is it will kill you. It will take you out later, sooner, doesn't really matter. But thank God, and literally I say that, thank God that I found a vision for you and understood the alcoholic situation, and people still don't understand that. Those are things I can never eat again because that will take me out just like it takes out an alcoholic. But thank God for this program. Thank God for the 12 steps. Thank God for living in 10, 11, and 12. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn T. Betsy, are you still interested in sharing? It looks like we do have about 2.5 minutes. If not, Betsy, is there one other person that would like to share for the last two and a half minutes?
Sarah N.
Okay, Sarah, it's yours.
Hi, thank you so much. So what really came up for me was the fatality issue of this disease. And for me, even besides the food, the difference between being unrecovered and recovered is the state of mind. You know, this is really about a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. So besides just what's happening to the body, I just remember, being so hopeless and just wanting to either die or kill myself. I thought about, different ways because I just couldn't manage life. My life was completely unmanageable. I would come into jobs. I would leave jobs. I would leave before I ever got fired because I would just felt so guilty about this, that. It was just the obsession of self that was happening to me that made me, not feel good about myself. And I was just the queen of self-pity and low self-loathing. And if it wasn't me, it was someone else. I can remember, one particular job that I had for like 5 years, and I was an admin assistant, and I always had the candy dish on my desk, and I had stuff in the drawers, you know, and I was so sweet and kind and helpful to certain people, and then other people I just detested, you know, and that was my Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So in any case, I am so grateful to be recovered. My mind is clear, and I can just, I'm, you know, not focused on self. I'm focused on others and how I can be of service. And I am a fantastic employee today, and I'm so grateful. I notice that difference. I get my work done. I show up, you know, on time. And if I don't, I, you know, if something happens, I've been able to just call and you know, do that like 10 steps. No big deal. So thank you so much. I pass.
Thanks, Sarah, for closing us out this morning. This is the end of the sharing part, and we're going to get into closing this recorded portion, but we're going to continue on after the Serenity Prayer. So stay with us because we want to greet those newcomers, and we'd love to have you join us in doing so. So thank you to everyone that shared today. And with closing this portion, we would like to have Jordan L. please read from the big book on page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only, and then we'll follow that with our Serenity Prayer together. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Mel. Can you hear me?
I can.
Sweet. Again, Jordan L., recovered compulsive overeater. our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.